telling me that it's solar cult theology. Yeah, you know, or stellar theology, and we're on the same page. Tell me that the Bible is Druidism, and I'm on the same page. But tell me that it's history of things that physically happen in time and place, you know, no way.
Look how much money is going into researching or verifying the Bible with our archaeology.
And who funds those guys?
Who funds
that appear
guys,
on Time Magazine cover and are always on the Discovery Channel with their million-dollar programs talking nonsense.
Jesus,
more
tomb
lies.
Or,
yes.
Herodotus, tomb. Or
well, these are the modern-day Herodotuses. You see, Herodotus, Pliny, Tacitus, Josephus, they're all under Roman patronage, royal patronage. Their checks were paid by the top boys. It is no different today. Most of the historical faculties, most of the scientists who are getting the real budgets are those who are endorsed by a system. If you break the system like a man called John Allegro did, to the Dead Sea Scrolls scholar, another name for people to realize, John Allegro, you're finished. Emmanuel Velikovsky, you're finished. You start off like us, hey, you're a great boy, you're doing well. Wait a minute, what are you doing now? You're refuting? You dare to refute the pack of lies that we've been telling you? All right, you're done. Commons Beaumont, Connor McDowry, Ignatius Donnelly, you know, the list goes on. Another lie is that the Jews were Semites. Well, I mean, nowadays, historians can't even tell you what a Semite is. They basically just say it's a language strain. I mean, they've so downed it, they're so confused even by their own concoction of the previous 60 years ago or 100 years ago, that now they don't even like to elaborate on what a Semite is. But we have been told for ages that the Jews, whoever they were Semites. Once the evidence now has been discovered that far from it, they were Egyptian dynasties and were almost Caucasian and Indo-European. Did you know that, it's absolutely incredible when you get into it that Thothmosis or one of the Amenhotep, one of the 18th dynasty pharaohs, you know, was, it was King David. It was no less than the famous biblical King David. If you read up on King David, they say that he was so red. He was so blonde and comely and good to look at, you know, so bright. His whole demeanor and his appearance was so light, fair-skinned. in these other, you know, books. We have the evidence.
Right.
And they're meant to be Semite. It doesn't even mean anything. Like I said, you know, we're dealing with history written centuries after these events have happened. Christianity, we're told, is a Roman invention. They want to say that Christianity started in Rome with St. Paul of Tarsus. You see the writing of the... Christianity in its essential nature is thousands of years before that. The true elements of Christianity go way back. Another era that I deal with a lot, Henrik, is that race mattered to the ancients. Because I'm going to get a lot of flack, you know, about the very name of my book. Until people realize, but I ain't talking about race. You go and take your little, you know, quandary about race somewhere else, because this book is not about race. Because race didn't matter. If your earth has gone through destruction that is unimaginable, hundreds and hundreds of tsunamis, you know, worth pole shifts. You're going to get up from that and wonder about fighting the other guy on the other side of the fence because he's racially different from you? Believe me, these are modern, superficial, highly funded divisions. Very recent. Race did not matter one bit in ancient times. It was not even a concern.
It's interesting because that's in a way almost, it prevents people from going back and trying to find accurate history in a way because, again, you have this political correctness in the way of all of this, you know?
In exactly the same way as you've got the physical water dividing England and Ireland, those divisions of having that water there has played right into the hands of those who want to, you know, hide the west to east movement. Having those islands divided helps the deceivers. Having these racial divisions, you know, believing that they exist, well, they exist now. So we look back from our pedestal and imagine that early races had it. Well, that's purely phantasmagoria. The only thing that a foreign race would have cared about is whether you worship the same gods as them or not, or the same luminaries in the sky. The only thing they were concerned about is the heavens and the gods and goddesses you worship. You could go to the most outlying place, and as long as you worship the moon or the sun, you see, or the recognizable gods, you were in. And in fact, that was up until a very recent time. It's one of the reasons why the missionaries had a lot of easy time converting people, because they just acted like their Jesus was Quetzalcoatl and all of this. They played that very game that I'm talking about, helping people to convert. Well, you see, in real times, it wasn't a manipulation. It was an actual fact. So we have been told, and it's a very brilliant insinuation, you know, the craftiness. Just like I started to question why are these churches on top of these ancient sites. You know, I've developed an insight, a mind, for noticing this kind of pernicious manipulation. When you insinuate these things, and we don't think about it, because we accept it. And then the most important one, which the book very much deals with, is that the word Aryan never meant race.
Yeah, that's right.
It was corruption by people like Max Müller.
Mm.
And, of course, we know the German archaeologists, anthropologists, you know, and they were kind of forced to do it at the time of the, you know. But even before them, the British had already been doing it, manipulating
yeah.
that word.
Yeah, of course. Has it anything to do with this, you know, root race, mm-hmm. you know, as they call it? Is Aryan connected with this,
no.
do you think?
Aryan, in my book, basically, you know, when people come to my work, you know, they can have to leave that at the door.
Mm.
The word Aryan did not represent anything to do with race or nation.
Yeah.
And I have the facts to prove it. It meant caste.
Mm.
So if people don't know what caste is, C-A-S-T-E, they need to look it up in an encyclopedia. To be more clear about it, it meant status,
mm-hmm.
rank,
mm-hmm.
and a specific kind of rank. In India, in any place where the true meaning of the word Arya is preserved, it meant man of light,
mm-hmm.
purified one. And they didn't care if your skin was black or white.
It has to do with the internal or the mental.
So the Arya can be found in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anybody screaming, going, hey, wait a minute. The black, the Eskimo,
mm-hmm.
right? The Sami, you know, the Chinese, the Outer Mongolian, the Maori, the South American, the Pygmy can have an Arya,
mm-hmm.
can be an Arya.
Mm-hmm.
Because it meant not, until these Victorian British establishment, Royal Academy funded, lying, cheating historians got hold of this term because they knew, leave this term unadulterated and you are going to be in trouble tomorrow. The people that I'm talking about who've ruled the world for generations, as I've said before, did not expect anyone under their rule to finally become literate as we are literate today.
Mm-hmm.
You better be doing handstands, somersaults to find out that you can read and write. Because our forefathers, even two generations back, weren't able to do that.
Yeah.
Right? So there's another positive thing that you can keep yourself happy
yeah,
about. That we
right.
actually have access to reading mm. and writing. That you now know something about what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
Better believe that was a privilege that was reserved for the monks,
mm.
you know, and for the kings and their people. You weren't meant to know these things.
Hmm.
So the one of the greatest corruptions has been done with this word. So when I say the Irish origins of civilization, I mean the Irish or the Aryan origins of civilization, the Arya, showing that it is civilization is not nationally based and it is definitely not racially based. It is based in a spiritual elect.
Mm.
Now the Nazis took that idea and said, yeah, we are the spiritual elect and we're white,
yeah.
Caucasian.
Yeah.
But we know that that's not true. We know that a Mexican can be of the highest morality. We know that a black man can go through hell of hell to preserve his... tell me what segregates men of color.
Mm.
You're going to tell me that Paul Robeson, who's one of my great heroes, he was black?
Mm.
Is any, you know, less great than, you know?
No, of course. This brings me back to a program I saw with the Hopi Indians talking about and they refer to the human beings as different, you know, going through different epochs, so to speak. And he talked about this, you know, the age that we're in now, basically, when things are changing and a lot of new is coming to the surface and all of this. And he was speaking about the next race or the next people coming to the surface. And again, this was from all cultures, from all backgrounds, and this has, again, more to do with something spiritual, something mental, where you're at in your mental, how stable you are in your mental environment, so to speak, because of all the things that will happen on the earth. And their prophecies and his words reminds me a lot about this, you know, in a way that you're talking about, a more ancient view on it, or a more... more noble view, I guess, in some sense, that this, as you say, hasn't anything to mm-hmm. do with racists or racism,
that's right.
because that's a that's a new political yeah. correctness that is just blocking all of this yeah. from getting to
resources. Remember that movie, Richard Harris, A Man Named Horse, where it's a white guy, blonde guy, ends up amongst the Native American Indians?
Mm-hmm.
And they look at mm-hmm. him as if he's crawled out of the slime because he's so primitive.
Hmm.
The only thing that, they didn't worry about his skin. They just went, this guy is an imbecile, he can't even feed himself.
Hmm.
They only looked at your quality, you know, if you can ride a horse, you know, can you weave a basket, can you survive in the wild?
Mm.
You know, we've got to re-examine all of this, because these is a welter of lies that have been concocted at a great expense for us.
That's right.
If you were a maker of civilization, and I mean on a small level or on a very large level, the only thing that mattered to you about the people who came into your court or the people that you saw in the streets was whether or not those people were morally and spiritually awakened.
Mm.
period.
Mm.
Yes, later on in time, especially as we've come into, you know, these monstrous industrial ages and agricultural ages and all so forth and so on,
mm.
we have had many divisions. We've had the feudal system,
mm.
which was so brutal, so ruthless.
Yeah.
So, you know, post the feudal system, yeah, you have every kind of imaginable division
mm.
in the human race in order to subjugate and keep the human being at the lowest possible level. When you're post-Rome, people look to these lovely, you know, movies of the Caesars and, you know, and all these Hollywood, think, oh, wonderful. You have no idea how barbaric these people were. They called other people barbaric.
Mm.
In fact, the word Celtic, which is a word I don't like, that was introduced by the Roman scholars, meant people outside Rome who were barbaric.
Mm-hmm.
If you really know what you're studying, you can forget about any glowing image of Rome.
Mm.
They were the most barbaric, murderous people on the face of the earth. And
mm.
I know who was behind them, too.
Mm.
They were just lieutenants for the old Atenists of Rome.
Mm.
But if you were a maker of civilization, like these shaman, all you cared about was a man's heart. Whether or not this person was ready for initiation into the mysteries.
Mm.
Right? And the mysteries were done in the dark.
Hmm.
In fact, in alchemy, you have three stages of alchemy, of matriculation, is negredo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rubedo, albedo,
mm-hmm.
meaning black, red, and white.
Oh, okay.
The black, the shadow work, is starting because in the darkness you can't see a person's height.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see their, you know, racial or, you know, the color of their skin or whatever.
Mm.
So this racial back and forth, which is very, very prominent today,
mm.
you know, Black Islam movement over there, right-wing extremists over whatever, you know,
mm.
Aryan brothers over there or whatever. These are people who are under a delusion.
Mm.
They can't. They're so into projection.
Mm.
They can't understand why, you know, some of these people who are on the extremist sides cannot conceive of the fact that a person of opposite skin tone can be a moral human being.
Hmm.
Or the way I like to put it is you have bastards in every race.
Right?
Believe me, it's not just in the white race or the black race, you know. Of course, if you believe that, well, then you got political standing now. You got a job. Because muckslinging at that group and them muckslinging at you is big business today.
Yeah, of course.
Well, what are you going to do of an evening?
As long as we keep on fighting amongst
right.
ourselves, nothing
that's right.
will be done.
So. You know, we've got it all over the world. We've
yeah.
got it in Ireland. We've got it in America. Oh, now you got a cause.
Yeah.
Now you got them over there.
Yeah.
None of this mattered in the ancient days. It only began, it started to matter when the empires that I, you know, describe as destructive, like the these necrotic empires, which basically, okay, let's say Rome.
Mm.
Rome is a necrotic, negative, murderous, you see, empire. Everything
mm.
today that we have in regards to law is Roman.
Mm.
The earliest laws were Irish. Do you know that?
Really?
The earliest system mm. of laws was Irish law.
Mm.
The earliest parliaments, the earliest culture.
Fascinating.
And it was extremely egalitarian. It
mm.
wasn't this brutal system that came in Rome. But the thing with Rome is, and Rome was also being steered by hidden hands in Tanis and Jerusalem and also in Athens. These people that I refer to as the Atenists, these people knew that you have no chance, zero chance, of building your leviathans of evil, both religiously and politically. You have no chance of building them if Druidism remains unmolested.
Mm-hmm.
It just can't happen.
So that's why they have been so beating this to
yeah.
to death, so to speak.
That's right.
Yeah.
They thought about it,
mm.
and then they said, let's just kill them all. And they methodically went through Europe and killed them all.
Mm.
Until they got the last of the Druids in Anglesey, which is in northern Wales, hunted them down and butchered them all.
Hmm.
This is a campaign of genocide
hmm.
that, you know, is again almost glossed over by historians. What would the might of the Roman army, who's, remember, on paper meant to be very tolerant,
hmm.
you know, so that they took from Alexander the Great, who has generals would marry in with foreign wives and all, they were usually very tolerant.
Hmm.
Well, then how come a little nothing bunch of harp players over in, you know, England and Ireland and Wales would demand the might of the of, you know, the Roman army to be seek them out and kill them.
Mm.
Well, we've got the facts.
Something very dangerous
you
there,
bet.
You know.
And we point this out, and
yeah.
I've gone back to the earliest documents to show the campaign of destruction that was done.
Mm.
And in short, it meant because they knew what they were going to build.
Mm.
These boys were ready to be building what we've got today in the streets. The schools, institutions, churches, religions, you see all of that.
The new world order.
The new world order. That's a Roman term.
Beginning there, exactly, yeah.
And this new world order, this corrupt edifice, like anything, you have to put the foundations in. Mm-hmm. The foundations is not going to go in when you have these earlier pristine, absolutely unadulterated, stellar churches erected by the Druids. So in exactly the same way that the conquistadors, we accept that this happens because the conquistadors did it. The missionaries have done it in historical times. Catholics have done it, the Protestants, and Protestants have done it, the Catholics. 100 years war has reigned in our own time. Well, believe me, thousands of years of war has reigned. So once we understand that, you know, and I still keep reading books today where they go, oh, these megalithic sites over here in Brittany, you know, they seem kind of similar to those over in Ireland, but they're a little bit different as well. What are you talking about? Different than Ireland. There was a land bridge that probably connected France to Ireland. Why don't you then say, this is a PhD historians, right? These guys are all degreed. Wouldn't it be so much better if they said, these megaliths, built by the same megalithic culture that once existed all over Europe, are very interesting. No, they don't write like that. They write to divide you, that these over here are different than those over there. And if you keep repeating the same mantra, people start to believe you. If you keep putting this on television and keep putting it in the books, then it's about, those interesting Basque guys over there in Spain. Wow, they're really cool. But they liked horses a little bit like the ones, you know, people in Ireland. You know, those guys over there in the Azores, they like the dog, you know, they have the thing with the dog going. And that's very, that's really kind of similar to Egypt, isn't it? Oh, yeah, and then those guys up in the north, those Viking guys, they were in those serpent-shaped boats. Wow, that's kind of interesting. That's similar to Ireland, you know, to Egypt. But, well, I guess it couldn't have been. You know, it's also divided and separate. So you start doing it in your own mind.
The
mind control.
There's so many things that is, again, is connecting with this because, again, we have been given all of the solutions, so to speak, for where we come from, the origins of civilization, all of this. Handed down to us, either it's, you know, even Darwinism in a way connects with that in specific areas, you know, the populations bring up is evolution, so to speak, of civilization from somewhere or whatever.
Yeah, not devolution, but, evolution.
Yeah, and as long as they must maintain that that front or that disguise, so to speak, because if that falls down. And you begin to question this, and you discover that there was an ancient global civilization that you know ran the entire show. So much is going out the window, so to speak.
So do you see why the British government could then fund the Nazis to say, "Oh, there was a global civilization. It was ours. It was a Germanic one, and it was us Nazi guys, and it was our ancestors." You see, so in other words, they know that you might see the bigger picture, so they give you one piece of the board.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
People better start understanding how this works.
Yeah.
Because they know that if they don't say something, then mavericks like Beaumont and McDarry will shove it in your face. So they also have to come up with their own little scam.
Sure.
And the way they do it is go, well, Egypt was kind of a very advanced. Yeah, we like, okay, there was an Egyptian civilization. Then you find a few ruins in Zimbabwe. They go, oh, well, maybe, you know. And then they go, oh, no, there was one. It was the great... Indo-European, Caucasian, you know, whatever, the great... So they'll give you a little piece, hoping that that will satisfy the scent. You know, they give you the sock, not the whole suit. So the dog is happy, thinking, oh, I got it.
Sure.
Right? This is, again, a brilliant device. It's only a very few scholars who have understood that, in fact, we may not be evolving at all. We may be devolving from super, you know, advanced civilizations.
That's right.
To say, Hancock and these other people, Michael Cremo, they can put your nose in it.
Yeah.
There cannot be a shred of doubt anymore that the 11,000 years BC, you know, time of history is accurate. We got Harappa. We got the Indus Valley. We got off Ceylon, Sri Lanka. We got, you know, those underwater ruins that they've discovered. We got Bolivia, where Jim Allen has found civilizations in the middle of Bolivia. My God, even in recent times, people couldn't even get over there to go through the jungle. Now they're finding whole civilizations. Augustus Laplanjean discovered incredible connections between Egypt and the queens and kings of Egypt and South America. Yeah, Augustus Laplanjean, I mentioned him in the DVDs, the Origins and Oracles DVD. These people are mavericks. So I believe that many of these lies are now are surfacing. You know, one of the greatest Egyptologists was called Sir G. Maspero. He was an archaeologist and an expert in Egypt. He said, quote, he said, what are the people by whom the Egyptian civilization was developed? What country did these people come from? What race did they belong to, you know? It's today unknown. Anyone who truly went with unblinkered eyes, you know, to Egypt and looked at especially the pre-dynastic period, And I believe that the dynasties of Egypt have actually been arranged in order to hide the pre-dynastic ruins. Even the timelines of the pharaohs have been highly manipulated because they don't want you looking back too far.
Do we still have access? And when I say we, I mean if you're not a scholar here, can you go and look at these, you know, scriptures of what happened in Egypt, you know?
But if you're ignorant, then what does it matter for the put right? How many people go and look at the Sphinx?
Yeah.
And how many people go and listen to the? I mean, they got tour guides there too.
Sure.
These are guys you want to strangle. The lies. Not unless you're Jordan Maxwell. See, Jordan can tell you some stories. You know, he'll be picked up at night. Jeeps will come, limousines will come, and you know he'll get the true story.
The true, okay.
Oh, yeah. He'll tell you some stories about the real McCoy, meeting the real guys who'll tell you the real story. They're lighting their cigars, laughing at the rest of the punters coming and looking at the pyramid. The pyramid has no markings, no inscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes up 13.5 acres. Nobody knew who built it. It's done in the pre-dynastic periods. They say Khafra, you see, is the pharaoh who maybe commissioned the building, but it's so old.
Yeah.
But Andrew Power and other people have pointed out, look, if you go to Ireland, you find the oldest dwellings in the world that predate the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And they look even more, even though they're very sophisticated, don't get me wrong. In style and design, they tend to be what is, you know, archaeologically called more rude.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're teaching a child how to build, if you're teaching anyone how to, the metaphor that comes to mind is spin pottery on a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
If I walk into my pottery class, am I going to create a Ming vase the first time around?
Yeah, exactly. No, we're not.
Not in a million
probably
years,
not,
right? So, obviously, if you see the more sophisticated versions in a very clear ascending scale, you find sophisticated ones in Egypt and you find slightly less sophisticated ones in Egypt, in Ireland, which is the older culture?
Yeah, that's right.
Very simple. So, I tell people not to worry about what history is telling you. Think about your own intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, gladly, we live in an Iranian age now where people can do this. Mm-hmm. People can visit Egypt on their own money. They can go there. They can use their own eyes. They don't need to, you know, be conditioned by these people.
Mm-hmm.
They can take on board things like what we said at the beginning of the show. If you walk outside your house and turn right and walk down to the end of the street, there is nothing more complicated about doing that than coming out of your house, turning left, and walking to the end of the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so if people could come from the east to the west, how can it be that scholars are adamantly telling you nothing moved from the west to the east in any sort of sizable way?
Yeah.
These people are liars. They've been proven to be liars. And the two things that have proved conclusively that they are liars is that, one, there were land bridges. Because until those land bridges were discovered, they could always bamboozle you by thinking there was a lot of water there.
Mm.
Not that I even believe that that would have been a problem even though there was.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's ludicrous, isn't it? But,
yeah.
I mean, God Almighty, the Phoenicians and these people.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But, you know, given the lowest level of mentality, okay, that's even destroyed because there was land bridges. They've been photographed.
Mm.
And two, you have the modus operandi, the reason for the move.
Mm.
The evidence of which Ellen and Dallaire and so many other scholars I've dealt with in my other works have proven that the unfathomable cataclysms that specifically destroyed the Northwest.
Mm.
If people don't want to buy into those big cataclysms, just study merely the, what's it called, the Storega tsunami.
Yeah, Storega, yeah,
right.
Sure.
Of 16... No, wait a minute, we're talking 6-1.
6,100 years B.C.
Right, B.C.
Yeah, yeah.
So the 7,000 years B.C., the 7th century, 7th millennia.
Sure.
B.C., just study that. Let's not add, for those who are interested, the Thera volcano in Santorini and Mediterranean.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I can think off the top of my head of the Mycenaean drought that shook the world.
Mm.
I can think of the Bronze Age famine that for 18 years wrecked Ireland.
Sheesh.
So, you know, you want a list of these? Where does it end?
Yeah.
You know, the skulls in Scandinavia wrote them down, but the fire and wind, you know, the terrible times of war and pestilence and devastation.
Mm.
Every culture has talked about these prolonged. It's not just a couple of months, we had a bad summer there, lads. This is 18, 20, you know, 30 years of unbelievable cataclysm.
Yeah.
You are forced to evacuate from your homes.
That's right.
You're forced to go and flee to warmer climates. And when you get there, you're taken for gods because you're so advanced.
Yeah, that's right.
And you contribute to those civilizations.
Yeah.
And then your music, you know, your pentatonic scales, your knitting, your basket weaving, you see, your stories, the rhythm of your poetry, the bardic poetry. Well, we got the proof. I mean, Robert Graves, you know, Fraser. There's no mystery to any of this. people realize, so when Maspero is asking, I think that this Egyptian civilization is not autochthonous. It is transplanted from somewhere else. Mm. He's absolutely right. Mm. But everyone that came in to describe how that could have happened, they were suppressed.
Yeah.
We are living in an Aquarian, you know, we're living on the cusp of an Aquarian age. We're living in a period of revelation, according to the Maya. People now need to get extremely serious about this, because you've had a campaign in the dark to gnaw away and slice away and hack away at the roots of our own culture, our civilization. I'm not interested in racial divisions or racial culture. I'm interested in spiritual culture.
Mm.
The only civilization that mattered, the only civilization that ever matters, is the one of cultural human beings.
Mm.
People who are dedicated to progress, dedicated to spiritual development, dedicated to humanity. You know, Freud, Nietzsche, all the greatest commentators on civilization, that's what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see too many digressions in Freud's book, or even in Nietzsche for that matter, where he gets into the racial quandaries, because any man of that intelligence knows that every human being has the potential to be both a devil and a god.
Hmm.
A man of Nietzsche's caliber, a man of Freud's caliber, wouldn't waste 5 seconds, right, on the question of whether, you know, one race is more superior than another.
Yeah.
This is the slop. This is the pig food that they throw out for those who have not the intelligence, you see, to understand what really gave a man levels of distinction.
Yeah.
But yet you turn on movies like Superman and watch what they're telling you subliminally.
Mm.
You turn on Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
You see, we will accept it in fiction that there are these overlords,
yeah,
or that these priestlyhood, the priesthoods,
mm,
the priestarchies, who didn't divide themselves by race but only divided themselves by spirituality.
Mm.
We'll look at the movie Dune and we'll accept, oh yeah, the cult of the priestesses.
Mm.
I can't remember the term that Frank Herbert used, but oh yes, there's the, you know, the Christ-like being there, the Kwisatz Haderach, and you know, we got this whole cult over here. Or we'll put on other shows, you see, where they show you Conan the Barbarian, you know, these sects of serpent-worshipping priests,
yeah,
you know, and all this
stuff.
Yeah, we'll accept it in fiction.
Yeah.
That these people are not divided by race.
Yeah.
They're divided by spiritual matriculation in exactly the same way you are today when you go to school.
Mm.
If you go to any average classroom today, anywhere in the world, you'll see all races there.
Mm.
All a teacher in the school cares about is whether you're an idiot or you're going to get the grade.
Mm.
That's what division is. Mm. They don't have them divided into male and female, do they?
I mean, no.
What a demeaning thing, right? They don't have them divided into, okay, you Irish, back of the class. Well, they used to do that anyway. Maybe things have progressed. You know, and you know, but I'm talking about, you know, they're not really into that anymore. It's about situation of whether or not you have the capacity.
That's right, yeah.
It was no different in the times of the ancient Druidic colleges. You know, the yew tree does not have a racial distinction between the yew and the oak.
So, I mean, why do you think it's important for us to unravel this historical aspect? What is the, you know, importance beyond the fact that this is highly interesting, of course, obviously, but as you say, because you referred to, again, we're, you know, approaching or are into the cusp or the verge into the Aquarian Age and so forth, 2012 and all this, how much part of, you know, trying to figure out what the heck has been happening in the past is an important aspect to what is going to happen in the future?
Well, you see, because people have no future unless they have roots. The whole question of a future is immediately obliterated if you don't have a past. Even if you really look at this metaphysically speaking, in order to have a road so you don't plunge off into an abyss, you have to have a road that started somewhere and it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
So the idea that you can inherit the future unless you know where you come from is utterly meaningless. You shouldn't be attached to the past and be, you know, pathologically or psychologically, emotionally, you know, sort of arrested in the past. That's wrong. But you must allow yourself a vista. When a man climbs a mountain, a very strange thing happens. As he climbs, it gets harder. Now, say you never climbed a mountain before and you don't know anything about it. As you start climbing this mountain, and given that you have a pack on your back, which is called life, as you start to climb, you start to discover it's getting harder and harder as the further you go up. It's getting harder, steeper, so it's all harder on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the air is getting thinner, so it's even harder on your lungs.
Mm.
So it gets more difficult. Plus, it's getting colder, and it might even be getting darker.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And it's getting lonelier.
Ooh.
Let's not forget that one, right? So as you climb and climb and climb, but one thing the gods are showing you, your vision of the landscape is getting broader.
Mm-hmm.
So even though that job, the task is harder, your vision of the panoply that's laid out in front of you, ergo the landscape, the view is much better the higher you go.
That's right.
So something, now remember, there's two types of people. There's people who focus on, this is a bugger, I'm out of here, and they go back. And when you're down at the bottom of the mountain, you walk on flat ground, and it's very relaxing and easy, but how much vision do you have of the world in which you live?
That's right.
You can't see past the next house.
That's right.
Then you get the other character who realizes this is agony. But wow, look at the view. Right? I got to continue because I'm seeing more and I'm going higher up and higher up and higher up. Until you get to the peak. And at that point, you have ecstasy. Because at a peak, what happens? You see the road down ahead or the road on the other side of the mountain, and you also see the past. So my work is about that. True historical revisionism is one of the most important of all subjects. When you study history, you're not studying history, you're studying yourself. Man studies himself when he studies history.
Interesting.
Yeah. You also study the greatest men of history. See, I really mean it. When my sole motive, you didn't ask it, but others have asked it, why are you bothering with this? Is because I really do have one motive only. And that is to bring back the teachings of Commons Beaumont and Conor McDarry and Anna Wilkes and Ignatius Donnelly back to the world. That's it. I've always been interested in the subject as a hobby, you know, and I haven't really discussed it with a lot of people in my private life, but this has always been a very great interest to me. Now I got the opportunity to write about it. My sole and major concern is to bring the Emmanuel Velikovskys, you see, the teachings of what I consider great men, back to the people of the world.
Yeah.
If you don't, they're buried in nameless graves, Henrik,
yeah.
And I will not permit that. Right? I will die before I'll permit that. Because I want to see people in graves, but they're the ones who are the deceivers. The teachers of light, of any age, of any time, we owe it to our ancestors, even if they're only ideological ancestors, to raise their monuments again, just in exactly the same way that you bring a wreath of flowers to a grave of a departed and a loved one. That is what I'm doing on a macro level. I honor these people for their studies and for their greatness and for their bravery, because I believe that intellectual courage, you know, the courage of a Mikhail Bakunin, of a Paul Robeson, you know, of a lot of people that have fallen, you know, in the name of truth, and the list is very long. Giordano Bruno jumps to mind, you see, and many others. I believe that these people should be celebrated, and because they were intellectually free, and the intellectually free are the Arya.
So, could we draw a reference? I don't know if that's, you know, not proper in this aspect to that sense, but look at, you know, Galileo, for example. He, after a long time, there were recognition there, so to speak. Do you think that we will take that long time here also, or could we do this quicker?
It doesn't matter, though.
It doesn't.
You see, the transmission of truth does not work in time anyway.
That's right, yeah.
You can have people who are blinded their whole life suddenly getting it. And you got people who've given this, who are given this information on a silver platter who never get it. And who don't want to ever get it. So this movement is really something out of time. Yeah, it takes a bit of time. You know, there's a drag factor in the sense that we weren't taught this in school. And yes, we got to read and we got to pick up the slack on our own time. But look, let's look at the positive side of that too. You are your own teacher. You're discovering your own light. And you are being informed about the great people, the Thomas Taylors, you know, the Alvin Boyd Coons, the Gerald Masseys. To me, there is no greater pleasure. These are my friends. These are my friends. These are the people who are teaching me. They're not the people who are deceiving me that I'm surrounded by in this world, a sick world that's going to hell in a handbasket. We have people of the past, you know, in the same way that you go to a gallery to look at Leonardo da Vinci. But a real answer to your question is, you see, the Arya is not something about the past. Yes, it would be a lesson in history. And I've said in many radio shows before, many talks, that I'm actually really not that interested in history, to tell you the truth, even though I write about it a lot. People go, oh, Atlantis, so what's it got to do with us? I'll tell you what it's got to do with us, is because you're living in the same times again. History repeats itself. I am less interested in the Arya of old as the Arya that are here today. We have the exact same conflict now as we have back then. It's just different rings, different arenas, different circuses. You play out the same game.
But you got to know what has been going on in order
to, because
you
learn from that.
What's the game? You know?
You learn from that. Yeah. We learn about the Romans. What are they all about? We learn about the Atenists. Remember, we were talking about Egypt and Maspero. not Maspero, but Manetho, writing hundreds of years, thousands of years after the events have happened. Do you know that most of what people know about Egypt today is only focused on the 18th dynasty? There's actually a sort of a conspiracy in the media and also in history to get you to only focus on history, on Egypt of the 18th dynasty.
Yeah.
They don't want you to know even what happened before that. So when you talk about people, hey, do you know anything about Egypt? Oh yeah, Tutankhamun, King Tut, sure. You know, Akhenaten. Only that? You don't know about, you know, the pharaohs of old? These incredible pharaohs of old before that period of time?
Yeah.
Or you don't know about the female pharaohs? These amazing female pharaohs, you know, and you don't know about the Hyksos? You don't know about... If you don't know about the Hyksos, you don't know about the history of the world. So we are still fighting these same people. They haven't gone away.
That's right.
I am not a person who is an academic. I am not a person who is, you know, writing books on dry history. I'm writing manuals... for war. You know, people who read my books know that. That we are not free from these people.
That's right.
We are under attack. We are in a situation where the deceivers of nations are absolutely still around in power.
Sure.
And our physical lives, our mental lives, every aspect of our lives is exactly in the same way as a feudal lord, directed to the serfs. Now, what was a serf? Let's remind ourselves. A guy that worked his whole life out and he didn't own a damn thing. A guy that if he got on a horse and tried to leave his village and went 5 or 10 miles, he could be hunted down and killed. A guy that if he wanted to marry, he and his potential wife, bride, had to come get down on their knees in front of the Lord, not Lord God, but the Lord. It was a feudal rite, by the way. And they put their hands together in the way that Christians put their hands together for prayer. How many people know that? How many Christians know that when you put your hands together in the famous prayer symbol, that had nothing to do with Christianity? That was a feudal symbol that you got down on your knees like a slave. You put your hands together and the Lord tied a leather thong around your hands and said, "You are my bond man and I bond you to this woman by the ring or the leather cord." And it's all fancy now where they put the nice, you know, nice ribbon over you.
Sure.
That was the Lord said, I think I'll give you permission. And you're going to get this, Henrik. If you came in front of the Lord and he didn't really like you for some reason, he could actually take your bride and rape that bride officially. Sheesh. Him and his men, before you got her for your honeymoon the next day. That's right. If he felt like it. Just to show you who was boss. If you had ever rubbed him up the wrong way before. This was going on until very recent times. So when I see people on their knees with their hands together worshiping the Lord... History tells you where that all really comes from. I don't want a Lord, you see, that puts me in servitude. I don't want a Lord that's telling me there's a secret knowledge, Michael. Join us. Here's the funny sign. You know, you have to become a member of the temple. And we're not even talking masonry here. We're talking fraternities. We're talking all that shebang from schools and colleges and all that nonsense, even at work. And they're going, look, you're an ignoramus. You have no ability to learn anything, but we'll give it. It's all laid on the plate. You're going to have political status. You're going to have, you know, religious status. You're going to have money. You just follow along with what we have said. And we got God at the top here, and we got us in the between, and we're the ministers of God. We control your life, and we ask you to jump through all these hoops. You have no freedom of expression. You have no freedom of mind. You know, why do I want a future, Henrik, if it's going to be like that?
That's right.
There is a future, but the future is not made yet. We make the future as we step into it.
That is right.
In fact, metaphysically speaking, it's quite interesting because we inherit the future exactly at the same moment as every atom does. There is no future for even the most smallest particle of matter is entering the future as we do. We're all on the precipice together, moving into the past. We all have, and the past even goes back further than you or my lifetime. Obviously, it stretches back into the history of time. But the future is absolutely egalitarian. It's what you or the dog or the atom makes of it. We all inherit the void exactly at the same moment.
On the edge.
Right, on the edge. We're right, like the fool card. In fact, the first card of the tarot shows you this.
Yeah.
That you're walking,
makes
the future.
Yeah.
But so does every other atom. There's no more stability for the atom, for the molecule, for the cells of your body. None of them have more of a guarantee than you do. Nothing does.
Yeah.
So I believe that if you're stepping into the future, and if you are trying to evolve towards a sane, hygienic, you see, rational, creative, which philosophical people and humanitarian people are wanting for the future, it is imperative to have that vista that I talked about, the mountain climber. If you're happy down in the valley walking on a horizontal plane, well, shit, past doesn't matter, future don't matter, there you are.
Perfect.
Right, but if you're a person who's vertical, if you're climbing the mountain, if you are seeking the truth in whatever way, truth of yourself, ultimately, because you are the Arya. Every person is potentially that Arya. that person halfway up the mountain gets involved in all these, you know, disputes about whether the black should get it or the white should get it or the Chinese should get it or the pygmy should get it or the guy who's, you know, 6 foot tall should get it or, you know, we have all of these debates and matriculations. Every human being is worthy of that knowledge to receive it, if in fact they can arrive at that place. The one good thing I like about the end of the movie of that, what is it called, The Last Crusade, the Indiana Jones, is brilliantly pointed out there. Because big ego man thinks that the, you know, the cup of Jesus is going to be the ruin that's all the gems on it. Of course, he takes it and dies a horrible death, screaming because he was wrong. It's actually the little wooden cup, the plain one, right? Yeah. What are we being told in that story of the, you know, what is the wooden chalice? You know, why is it wood? You see, there's a lot of, we got whole things there. So entering the future is like crossing a river in which you only have one, you have two logs. And as you go, you don't build a bridge, but you take one log from behind you and put it in front, one log from behind you and put it in front to get across the river. This is what we're given. Now, the Caesars want to build bridges, but as you saw, empires rise and fall. There's no stability in that. You only have the present moment, you see, and your experience from the past and where you're going. So where are we going? We are going towards our own spiritual awareness. You cannot do that while you have parasitical, tyrannical individuals on your back. So the final answer to that question is this: there is a distinguishing characteristic about these vultures. There is a distinguishing characteristic that makes them the controllers and the rulers over you that you don't have, that they do. You know what it is?
No.
Knowledge of history.
Oh.
That's your answer. The distinguishing thing that makes them have power over you is that they know where they've come from, and they know about tradition, and they know about culture, and they've been suppressing it and sequestering it. So my work is about to get you equally empowered. Because once you start learning, looking over their shoulder, you know, then you start to get involved in what they're doing. Because knowledge, you have to have knowledge of your opponent. If you don't know what makes these people tick, then don't even bother trying to fight. You might as well just put your head on the block, right? You've got to know what makes them tick. You've got to do something that they do. Look at the queen. Look at the coronation. Look at the pope. Look at the emphasis on regalia and history.
Yeah.
Look at the emphasis on the Egypt. So, yeah, we're not writing, you know, some, you know, spinner rack thing here for the mere, you know, edification of people. In the normal historical sense, we're talking historical revision here. We're talking about trying to get you as empowered as the people who are controlling you, so that you can take them apart at their own game.
And you can see where it's going, and you can pick up on even you know, if you're familiar with history and what has been happening in the past, you're more and more quickly are going to get up to speed, so to speak, at what is happening now and why the moves, you know, or why the world is moving in the direction where it's moving, you know?
That's right, because they're leaving trails. They also sort of advertise it in a way, not so that your left brain will understand it, but these people are, through their movies and advertisements and all sorts of ways, through artwork, are very happy to tell you where they're heading and what they're doing. They're giving you updates. But see, an illiterate person doesn't know what's going on. It's just like never reading the highway code and getting into a car for a joyride. You're going to be crashing through every red light. It doesn't matter, you're going to find yourself up a tree, you know, or in a ball of flame with 15 other people, you know, injured. This is the inevitable journey that is, oh, well, we don't know anything about the past. Let's just go for it. This is this joyriding, you know, moment that is very exhilarating. But you can, you know, what's the point of living like that?
And there is no ruling hand in history. You know?
Yeah, it's, no it's, ruling hand in history.
Everything is a coincidence.
That's right.
Things just pop up on the horizon. You know, it's no plan. No, because
that's right.
Again, then you go into the conspiratorial, you know, worldview.
Yeah.
And then you're, you know.
But as G.O. Griffin has said many times, tell me where there's not a conspiracy.
That's right.
He goes, when you sit and try to undermine a fellow businessman, or you have some feud with it, just even family members, that's a conspiracy right there.
Yeah.
A couple of family members conspiring against other family members. A couple of businessmen trying to outdo another business or another businessman. Doesn't it happen on Wall Street every day? Doesn't it happen on the streets every day?
Yeah.
Don't police try to conspire about how to crash a drug gang or something like that? Well, tell me where there's no conspiracy. But again, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't accept a west to east movement, but we have no qualm. We don't even question if it's east to west. Oh, we don't accept conspiracy, but of course it happens everywhere.
Yeah.
So what is wrong with the human brain? Again, it's that drip feeding. It's that slow indoctrinating policy. You know, you've gone to school. You've been taught by these institutions, and we've been taught very well. So life happens to be an act of deconstruction.
Yeah.
True evolution, true discovery is you unraveling yourself like a kind of a Houdini from the webs of lies that have been put around you in your mind.
Yeah.
you know, okay, so if my, you know, work helps a person do that, fantastic, great.
Yeah.
That's not my motive, because I remember it's the efforts on the person's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you climb up the mountain and you start to see this panoply, I believe that you have an immediate passion to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
In whatever way. There's different ways that people act
mm-hmm.
to do. Because when you see that there is this kind of level of manipulation, you know, at least I do, I feel very, very compelled to do something about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the same way that if I find some, you know, sort of like, I don't know, parasite in my house or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, you got to do something about it. And although everybody doesn't get out, you know, with a bullhorn or placards and protest, whatever, people do it, you know, in their own way. And
I'm finding them all over the world. My work is dependent often on people sending me stuff from all over the world.
Mm.
People who say, hey, I'm not interested in, you know, have a big name. I can barely talk about this to my mates, to my friends. You know, it's a bit of a downside. But, hey, I can send it to you. Here, look what I found.
Yeah.
You know, and they're researchers. These are people. See, again, look at that. See, people take that for granted. Do you know how hard that was to do?
Mm.
You know, in ages past, you didn't even have the access to anything.
That's right.
I mean, I can't emphasize this more. The level of suppression is the only word, you know, for it, really.
Yeah. And that also shows that this is a process that have to come from within people themselves, because the means are there and the information is there now. In that sense, there's so much out there, and if people really are genuinely interested in whatever, you know,
they can find out.
Yeah,
your radio show, others I've been on, you see, the, you know, the web. I look at all of that, and I have no problem with any of that. I know even why we're living in a sort of a semi-Uranian age in which the technology itself has come aboard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it from that macro level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even interested in why the technology has come about to broadcast this information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. Because a lie can never be forced to the ground forever. People have heard that been said from Shakespeare onwards, but they never really thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a living fact that evil cannot win.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a simple fact.
It's finding a way to express itself in order to, or find the means in order to express itself.
Yeah. Or, you know, let's put it this way. Just because you don't believe what I've said doesn't make it any less true.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
a person may languish, you know, and may be all tied up in knots thinking, oh my God, evil's going to win. That's your affair. That's what your story.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with the facts. The fact is, evil cannot win. Never has, never will. There's a homeostasis in the universe.
Mm.
This was very much, it was personified in an Egyptian goddess by the name of Mayat.
Mm-hmm.
And her name and her glyph meant a half, like we would do 0.5
mm-hmm.
or half of something,
okay.
Like a half, fraction. That's what her name meant. And it meant balance. She was the lady of the mirror. And basically, also, her greatest symbol was the scales. You know those big scales that you see where the soul is brought for judgment?
Sure.
And the priest of Mat really understood that everything is in perfect balance. Only your misunderstanding of that fact creates imbalance, which is the delusion, or a momentary aberration of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already pointed out in my earlier work where that aberration of consciousness comes from. It's from genetic interference and all sorts of scientific malarkey, you know, messing with our DNA. Man became aberrant. His brain, his thinking became skewed and narrow, you see, and very, very, very destructive, necrotic, in other words. And it's from that state that man has to evolve through, you know, finding his hygienicness and from studying subjects of history and so on. But the downside is that we have let this go on for so long that now the most toxic of the people of the world are ruling. But you deal with that in a homeopathic method as you would in a normal situation. You don't charge at them with swords anymore. You deal with it in a homeopathic way, which is strengthening your own immunity.
Mm-hmm.
That has many different modalities to do that. It can involve lots of different things, but that's your game, that's your excitement, that's your own discovery. You go and find out what, you know, makes your work pleasurable. You know, for some people it could be healing, for others it's numerology, for other guys it's, you know, it's sacred geometry, for other people it's, you
art,
know, studying
music,
the art,
you know?
Music,
yeah.
Learning about the Bible codes, you know, or whatever, you know, or making a movie or something.
Sure.
You know, there's 100 music. You're going to tell me that, you know, Frederick Handel didn't change the face of the planet by what he wrote in music? Of course he did. So there's 101 ways. That's the individual person. So we are dealing with a situation in which we are not going to, our evolution is being inhibited. So now you fall into two categories. You're a person who either does something about it or you live in that inhibited state. I really don't complain. You know, I'm not worried about those people who live in an inhibited state because those people have just made that choice. You see, even the Illuminati and these secret societies, I have no problem with them. They have the choice to do what they do, and you have to give them the choice. But they also give you the choice to do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
They have the right to do whatever they want to do, because that's an extension of who they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they could not do what they're doing if you didn't permit it.
That's right.
I mean, we've said it before.
If you think about it in the long run.
You gave them the power.
Sure.
Because, first of all, these Druidic colleges was destroyed. The secret teachings of how a man could be strong in himself, you see, has all been lost. We have little elements of it here and there. But the great ways were lost. They were eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
And man has also lost his way existentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, he's able to be, you know, prayed over very, very easily. But I believe that if you show a lot of people this fact, if you demonstrate to them that you are under control, your thinking is not your own, everything is borrowed, you are not yourself. I believe a lot of people have an inward, you know, very deep set instinct to change that reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really do. I really believe that in the core of people, they don't want to be slaves. Yeah, it's unnatural to be
course,
a slave.
Yeah.
They may get used to it, and they may even forget that they are slaves.
Exactly.
Right.
That's
this is important.
That's the new kind of aspect to all of this.
The invisible cage.
Exactly. The scientific dictatorship,
right.
as it were. You know, the people don't discover this anymore.
Which is why the establishment has been moving in that direction, because they know that works.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually make people so satiated with a bunch of sensational rubbish, and in fact, you can I'll extend that to say a sensational knowledge of things.
Hmm.
You know, label reading.
Yeah.
Like I'm dabble in this. Oh, I dabble in that. Yeah, I read Zachariah Sitchin. I picked up a David Icke book. I'm a bit of a dabbler. I listen to Alex Jones. You know, okay, wait a minute. Where are we going with this? You know, it's like
there's no really application of the information itself, but it's more like being knowledgeable about all the.
Well, it's another bandwagon. It's another flavor of the month. You know, I know many people. In fact, most of the people that I know that I have come across in my life are dabblers, just like that. It's just something they're going to do today, and then tomorrow they leave it.
Sure.
They have no real passion or interest in it at all.
Hmm.
But see, I'm not ever looking to all the people to do X, Y, Z. All the people are never going to do anything.
Mm.
I'm only looking to the people who have changed their own ways and who've understood these fundamentals and what change is really all about.
Sure.
You cannot change society. You can only change yourself. Once that's fully understood, we have no problem. We have no qualm. Anyone who is who's running around doing political work is a fool. Anyone who's in any way doing anything in their life to change others or to change the collective in a us and we
kind of way.
Is suffering from that dementia, that aberration.
Yeah.
The only kind of change is personal change, the I.
Oh, shit. And but that's so difficult, you know, for many to get in that sense, because it, as you say, it's always about what are we going to do about it?
Right.
You know, we got
as soon as you hear that, you know there's a problem.
Hmm.
You know, as soon as you hear that, what are we or what are us are going to do? You know, them is another extension of the thing.
We got to set up, unions of some kind, or you know, whatever.
Another cult, another sect that they'll infiltrate in 5 minutes, be back in the filing cabinet again under lock and key.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how easy? You know, if I was them, it'd be a laugh, a joke. You know, it's not a problem. And luckily, you know, there's people from within these cabals who have discovered this, that they've been infiltrated, that they're not sustainable anymore. A lot of these New Age cults, people from within are going, yeah, it's fake. It doesn't work. They've been infiltrated. It's not happening as we thought it was going to happen. I'm going to, you know, move out of here. And we're having a lot of people, you know, show more interest in, you know, our own work. Jim Mars, you know, Jordan Maxwell, David Icke, you know, Alex Jones. We're getting more and more interest. For more and more people that used to be sort of, you know, caught before in webs of the New Age crap, you know, and religious rubbish.
Sure.
You know, they're starting to wake up and realize, yeah, this doesn't answer these questions. It's more of a, actually, it's more contradiction in a way. Every single day I get, you know, 200 emails, and a great deal of them are saying, man, I feel so awakened. You know, I've never felt like this before. I'm really seeing reality in a new way. Well, you're climbing the mountain. You're getting a larger and larger perspective. But it is hard, and they'll complain. You know, man, it's lonely, it's hard, I'm bruised knees, you know. But see, those are people who are exhilarated by the fact that they're seeing a greater and greater landscape. And that is exhilarating. Just in the same way as you're climbing a physical mountain, you don't go back because there's no going back. And when you finally get to the top, you see you have a vision of both, of all of it. You know, your territory is pretty small what you're standing on, but look at what you see. You have a rare and unique vision of the whole of life and the whole of the meaning of life.
Yeah.
And the most important thing is when you arrive at the peak is you have not asked somebody else to bring you the mountain.
Yeah.
You haven't asked somebody else, hey, so what's this like? You know, you're living beside the mountain and go, hey, tell me all about it.
Exactly.
You know? And you have, because today what we have is a world of people who don't want freedom or enlightenment. They want people to give it to them. I'm just a voice who comes in and go, hey, stop. Can you stop asking this guru, this priest, this teacher, this freaking general or this, you know, politician to give you something that you can actually attain yourself? Are you really interested in enlightenment, or are you more interested in Big Daddy giving it to you? Well, I know what the answer is. They're interested in Big Daddy giving it to them. This is what has to change. Yeah, you have a right aspiration. It's good to aspire towards enlightenment. But it's wrong to aspire to someone else to give it to you. And once people realize that and utterly realize that, I see the workings of that in my own mind, I'm going to stop that. I can ask people for physical, material things, for sexual things, no problem, that's fine. There's a normal interchange between human beings. But see, for psychological and spiritual reasons, there's no two people on that path. There's no room for the guru. You are the pharaoh, you are the priest, you are the sorcerer, you are the magician, you are the shaman, you are the teacher.
You're the one who has to do it.
You're the one who has to walk that path.
Yeah. Michael, I think that this is a great place to round things up for this time. And we're going to continue, you know, in the future shows here together, speaking more also about the Irish connection, as it were, and continuing on that note. And I guess in the meantime, we would, from this point of view, refer people to IrishOriginsBooks.com. It's a pretty new site up there, I guess. It's fairly recent, right?
Yeah, well, it's gone through changes. So if they go to MichaelTessarian.com, they'll see the link there, obviously, very easily. They'll see a clear link. Or they can just type in IrishOriginsBook.com. And go there. And on there, we have a lot of material. We have a very extended appendices, which is online. So people can read the appendices. They can also read excerpts of the book itself. They can certainly read the preface, you know. And they can also email me to reserve copies, which is what's happening now. We've got people from all over the world reserving copies if people want to do that. Because the first run is always the most interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of people who want the first run of books. You know, that, and people are welcome to do that, so they can have an early, like a first edition, I guess you would call it.
Nice.
When we start printing them, and go on there and keep. You know, I want people to use that site. That's a reference site. I mean, that appendices section is going to be online. So anything that people send me about this subject, you know, which I'm sent things of incredible nature every day. You know, is going up there, so it's not static. Please realize that even if a couple of days go by, like the forum. You know, it changes.
Yeah.
So if you've seen the appendices, you know, 2 days from then it's going to change again. There's going to be additions. I've just put up a section in the appendices on the Minoan civilization, based on the work of two fantastic authors, Stephen Defoe, I want people to get into the Cretans. There's a very important aspect here linking to the Minoan civilization of the Mediterranean. So, you know, we're adding stuff all the time to the appendices. You know, people can visit that. And again, you know, also, they're free to contact us or send information to us.
Wonderful. You
know, because remember, I'm only jump-starting this subject again. Commons Beaumont in the 1960s was the last one to really deal in this particular question until it got completely, you know, sequestered and stamped on. So I'm reviving it again. You know, we've had a lot of scholars writing a lot of books here, and most of it, a lot of it, bogus history. This is a very verifiable stuff, and we're in the age in which the truth of this matter is coming out. So stay with it, because we're having incredible revelations, you know, every day. We've got runes being discovered in Bosnia, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
We've got underground tunnels being found there. We've got pyramids turning up everywhere you look. You know, we got a whole new vision of history. So be with it. Don't find out after the fact, like Schopenhauer said. You know, you guys find out later after it's done. Find out with it. Be part of this trend. You know, I am not an individual just doing this on my own. I'm following in the footsteps of people who came after me. And you know, my job is to also encourage people to be looking at their own histories. You know, I was sent some remarkable information from Bulgaria, from this guy who's totally into the subject of the Irish connections to his town of Bulgaria, his city, you know, his country of Bulgaria, and the rivers and the names. Sent me this magnificent information.
Right.
You know, it's totally embellished the book, you know.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so, you know, it happens. And that's... it's tremendously exhilarating to have a new vision of history. And know that when you're adopting this new vision of history, you're actively challenging the people who have a lot to lose should you discover what kind of lies have been perpetrated on this planet.
That's right. So again, everybody, do take a look. The main site again is michaeltessarion.com, and check out irishoriginsbook.com, and of course originsandoracles.com for the Michael's excellent DVD series. But again, Michael, thank you so much for spending the time with us here today. We always enjoy it, and we're looking forward very much to speaking with you next time again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Farewell to the groves of Shillelagh and Shamrock. Farewell to the girls of old Ireland all round. May their hearts be as merry as ever I would wish them, when far away on the ocean I'm bound. Oh, my father is old, and my mother's quite feeble, to leave their own country, it grieves their hearts sore. Oh, the tears in great drops down their cheeks they are rolling, to think they must die upon a foreign shore. But what matter to me where my bones may be buried, if in peace and contentment I can spend my life? Oh, the green fields of Canada, they daily are blooming. It's there I'll put an end to my miseries and strife. Then let's pack up your sea stores and tarry no longer. $10 a week isn't very bad pay, with no taxes nor tithes to devour up your wages. When you're on the green fields of America, the sheep run unshoed, and the lamb's gone to rushes. The handyman's gone, and the winders have closed. Away across the ocean, good journeymen tailor, and fiddlers that flaked out the old mountain reels. Ah, but I mind the time when old Ireland was flourishing, when lots of her tradesmen could work for good pay. But since our manufactories have crossed the Atlantic, it's now we must follow to America. Thank you.
And it's now to conclude and to finish my duty. If ever friendless Irishman chances my way, with the best in the house, I will treat him and welcome. At home on the green fields of America,